RCR with Paul Brennan, Reality Check Radio.
Last week, the Climate Change Response Emissions Trading Scheme Agricultural Obligations Amendment Bill passed its third reading in Parliament. The bill follows through on the government's election promise to keep agriculture out of the ETS. Agricultural emissions were due to come under the scheme in 2025, but that will no longer be happening. To talk about this, joining us now, Andrew Hoggard, Minister for Biosecurity, Minister for Food Safety, Associate Minister of Agriculture, and Associate Minister for the Environment. You've got a lot on your plate, Andrew. Welcome.
Good morning. I certainly do, yes.
Okay, just a first quick question before we start on the ETS. ACT is the free speech party, isn't it?
Yep.
Okay, so we're too immature or incapable of hearing what Candace Owens has to say if she visited. You got any response to her visa being denied?
I haven't actually heard that one. I've been on the road the last few
days.
Okay,
what's the immediate response to me telling you that then?
Basically, I don't really agree with people being kept out of the country for positions where some people might take offence at. I've heard her a couple of times. I can't say I agree with everything she's got to say, but personally, I can't see the harm of if she's not stirring up war or fermenting rebellion or anything like that. Honestly, I think there's times where people overreact to other people, and basically, if you don't like what they have to say, don't go along and listen.
Yeah, that's right.
If they're on the radio, turn it off. Do your own thing. Live your own life.
Yeah. We've been treated like children. I'm not going to get hung up on this because I want to go to the subject, but you kind of feel, and it's an insult to me, actually, a hit on my dignity that I'm being treated like an idiot.
Yeah, look, I think we're up for having debates. I mean, last night in Tai Happy, we had more people that were wanting to protest the bill than actual people that were wanting to listen to us talk on other things, but we let them in. They had their say. We responded. We had a good conversation. That's how it should be. You know, you don't have to, what do they call it, the heckler's veto, have that in place and shout people down. You can have a discussion. Best ideas win.
All right. What is the government's basic argument then for why agriculture should be kept out of the ETS, but other sectors should go in? It's kind of a little unfair to other sectors, some might think.
Well, I mean, basically the problem with, other sectors have a whole bunch of industrial allocation, meaning that where they're trade exposed, they don't, they've got a free allocation that tries to put them on a level playing field with competitors overseas. No other country in the world is taxing agricultural emissions. So this would automatically put our farmers at a complete disadvantage to every other farmer in the world on a trade basis if we were taxing emissions. In fact, virtually most other farmers in the world get paid by their government to do environmental stuff. We're probably some of the most environmentally friendly farmers in the world in terms of the work we do on our farms, but we have to pay for it as farmers. So we're not even getting subsidies, we're paying for it. So this would just be completely counterintuitive to have farmers in the ETS when no other farmers around the world are in it. And the implications were quite stark in the previous government's report on Hiwaka Ekanoa when they came up with their final decisions a year and a bit back. And basically it showed that Hiwaka Ekanoa proposal that the government was going to push forward was going to cost, reduce sheep and beef production by around 20%. Wow. And the ETS backstop would have been even worse, up to 40% less beef from memory, I think. And that when we're the most carbon efficient farmers in the world, us reducing production just encourages that production to go offshore, and thus you have actually higher emissions. So made no sense.
Yeah, higher emissions. Do we actually know that? Well, okay, there are more emissions, but the negative effect on climate. I mean, the jury's way still out on that, Andrew. I mean, we're having to buy into just what a few people kind of who've drunk Kool-Aid tell us is true. But we don't know any of this is actually, you know, reality, do we? So what are we basing this on in the first place?
So if you're talking about the emissions from an actual individual cow, we do know that, you know, they put them in measuring chambers and all the rest of it, and they know, okay, here's the gas that comes out of these cows or sheep. So we know that part reasonably well.
We know gas comes out of animals, gas comes out of meat every day. In fact, just not too long ago. So we know all that. What I'm saying, though, is it being, you know, held up as one of the drivers of global warming, climate change, and the end of the world. I mean, do we really have to buy that on such flimsy evidence?
Look, my attitude is whatever the customer wants is what the customer gets if they're willing to pay for it. And my argument, I don't really want to get into all the detailed science and is this true, is it not true? Quite frankly, does my customer want an improvement? Yes, they do. Okay, fine, I'll do that for my customer. Does the government need to be involved? No. The market's handling it, and my argument would be the government doesn't need to be involved here. The market is handling it. Fonterra, the meat companies, they're saying, hey, we'll pay you an extra few cents if you're doing this, or, you know, we want you to achieve this. So there's market drivers happening. Just follow the market. We don't need a whole bunch of government intervention in this space, and things will change over time. I get one thing I really get frustrated is, you know, they made the comment, you know, this catastrophizing, or, you know, it's the end of the world
catastrophizing
sort of stuff. I really hate that, because I think that just freaks the crap out of a lot of kids. And, you know, I've got young children myself. I don't want them thinking there's no future. Quite frankly, I remember when I was young, you know, the world was going to end from, I think it was the ozone layer, then there would have been something else. SARS, we were all going to die from. Y2K, we're all going to die from. All the rest of it. We adapt, we overcome. You know, I think, yeah, be positive about the future. Humans are smart things. We'll come up with solutions. So I hate all of this. It's the end of the world rubbish. And I think, you know, if there's a scientific challenge there, we'll sort it out.
Speaking of which, what progress has there been that you can tell us about on technological interventions to reduce agricultural emissions?
Well, I do know, so from my involvement over the years, there's a feed additive that will reduce. It's on the market called Bovia, but that's got to be eaten in every single mouthful of food. There's certainly some plants out there that will reduce emissions from animals. There's a lot of work happening. Some of it has been going on for a while, and, you know, will we find a solution? Who knows? But right now on farm, there's not a lot of silver bullets or silver shotgun shells or anything really to apply. It's just about being an efficient, effective farmer is the main solution, which we do pretty bloody well.
Yeah, it seems that we're turning to GE for solutions. Do you see solutions there?
Well, there's certainly plants that have been developed previously under GM. There's some new interesting research going into, can we gene edit? So that's not bringing in things from other species, but gene edit the endophyte in grass that will promote lower methane. And that's probably a really good pathway to follow, because with the endophytes you don't have the worry about cross-pollination, so you can have a GE field next to an organic field and there's no worry about the organic field getting contaminated from the GE field. So I think that's a really exciting area of research, not only for methane but possibly other beneficial things that we might want to push for animals to boost production, encourage better health and welfare.
Okay, the mRNA vaccine for humans, COVID, has been an absolute disaster. Don't care what you think, but that's what I think and a lot of people think, and I think the evidence bears that out. So we don't want to be putting animals anywhere near that sort of material, do we, or other biotechnologies that alter the animal's natural biology? What do you think about that, using those tools?
Look, if it's proven, I mean, the main thing is it safe? And so having the research and the systems in place to know that something is safe. So in terms of food safety minister, you know, that's the thing I focus on. Are there residues? Are there any issues with the food? Is it, can we say scientifically this is safe? And then, you know, my view would be you make sure that there's the labelling requirements around it and people are free to pick and choose. So if someone wants, doesn't believe in mRNA vaccines, I mean, animals get a hell of a lot of vaccines right now.
Yeah, it should be on the label, though.
I don't think any of them are mRNA.
Should be on the label, though, shouldn't it? Because I wouldn't go near it if I knew that. But I'd need to know.
The thing is, where we go with, it depends on the technology. So, I mean, what's being proposed at the moment is having it much more freer around the gene editing, because the gene editing is stuff that could be done naturally given enough generations.
Oh, yeah, 120,000 years, Andrew. We're fiddling with nature.
I'm slowly moving my herd to polled cattle. It's taken it's probably going to take me 20, 30 years. Or gene editing, I could do it in two or 3 years. I mean, these are the tools that can be used, and there's going to be no way for us to tell any difference between these animals, and the cost would be ridiculous. Now, should the cost be borne by everyone? And now, if you want something that's organic, that's proven, then there's nothing stopping that person from labeling their product that this doesn't contain that, blah, blah, blah. They have to just have the proof that it doesn't contain any of this stuff. And obviously they'll pass on the cost of proving that to you to pay. Whereas people that aren't interested, that just want, you know, they're on a low income, they just want food, they aren't worried about this stuff, keep the costs low for them so they can buy the food and keep themselves.
Yeah, but they might be eating the crap. You see what I'm saying?
It's their choice. I mean, freedom of choice.
Well, they can't afford it, Andrew.
Well, they can afford, I mean, this will make it cheaper. I mean, adding all of these.
Yeah, but they're taking the hit of additives. They might not want that, but they're being forced economically to take the lowest common denominator crap food.
Well, and again, it's people's choice as to what they eat. If they want the stuff that's all proven and organic and whatever, keto, whatever other labels you want to pay, put on it, then they're going to have to pay that premium for those people to do the work to show that, hey, this is what we're producing. I think a lot of people are just, they need to know the food's safe, and that's going to be a requirement that, you know, there is safety proven, and that will be scientifically done.
Many of our listeners tend to view these big international climate agreements as being more about global control, global governance, and redistribution to developing nations than as a genuine attempt to improve the climate. Do you have any comment on that?
Well, I saw an interesting graph on the growth of COP correlates quite nice in terms of the number of people attending. That correlates quite nicely to the global emissions increasing. Look, I mean, some of these global agreements, there's a lot of talk. Actions count more than words. I mean, ACT's policy going into the last election is we'll do what our competitors actually do. And by and large, you see Europe admitting that, hey, we're not going to achieve our targets. The US, obviously, you know, I think Trump pulled them out last time. Biden put them back in. Pretty sure Trump's going to pull them out again. Mm. So, you know, for us as a small trading nation at the bottom of the world, you know, we can't be the absolute Puritans of everything. I think it's important that we focus on doing what we do well. We do, as far as I'm concerned, our agricultural sector anyway, is world leaders. I don't think we need to be flagellating ourselves to any degree. We just need to keep doing what we do well.
Okay, last question. The Climate Change Response Emissions Trading Scheme Agricultural Obligations Amendment Bill. Do you think that that is what the most election, or the top election promise delivered to the farming sector from the coalition government? Would you describe
as
that?
No, I think the big promise is what we're going to be working hard on next year, and that's reforming the RMA and coming up with something new for that. That is the most I truly believe that's the most significant piece of work that we'll be doing that will deliver the best bang for buck for New Zealand farmers, but all for all of New Zealand, for everyone that wants to get anything done in this country. Resource Management Act has been an absolute hindrance for us doing anything in this country.
All right, Andrew Hoggard, thanks for coming on this morning, Andrew.
No problem.
The RCR shop has great gift ideas, from great-looking tees, hoodies, caps, tote bags, bumper stickers, and more. The RCR shop is now open at www.realitycheck.radio/shop.